Hello?
Yes, good evening, and welcome back to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I am your host, Lance White, also known as the Zany Mystic. Tonight, I'm thrilled to have Jessica Murray as my guest. Jessica Murray trained as a fine artist before graduating in 1973 from Brown University, where she studied traditional psychology and linguistics. After a stint in political theater, Jessica began a study of metaphysics and has been practicing and teaching astrology in San Francisco for 30 years. In addition to her monthly Skywatch, Jessica writes commentary for daykeeperjournal.com, as well as articles for the Mountain Astrologer, Psychic and Spirit Magazine, and other publications. Her new book, Soulsick Nation, An Astrologer's View of America, is an in-depth study of the global role of the United States, its recent past, and near future. You can find out more about Jessica on her website, www.mothersky.com. But let's find out more from her in person by welcoming her to the show now. Hi, Jessica, how are
Hello
you?
Hello there, Lance. Very well.
Oh, phew. Well, now that we got that out of the way, I imagine you have plenty to talk about. I just finished reading your book, by the way, Soulsick Nation.
Mm-hmm.
It's an astounding read.
Thank you.
You hit the ball right out of the park.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, I honestly haven't read a book that is that insightful or witty or intelligent or prophetic, or it has everything in it.
That's wonderful to hear.
Yes, and I encourage everybody to read it.
Well, you know, the times are so amazing and urgent.
Yes,
and
yes.
Jacked up, and the energy in the collective is so unusual.
How do you see that?
Well, I see it in two ways. One is that I can feel it.
Uh-huh.
All of us can.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
We can feel it in the airwaves, and
oh,
we
yes.
are, after all, just animals.
Yes.
We can sniff the air, and we can feel it.
Yeah.
And then I see it astrologically,
ah.
which is, as you know, there are these formations that are happening in the sky that have to do with planets lining up in certain configurations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what astrologers do. They read these transits, as they're called, and interpret them. And they're all coded. They're coded meaning systems up there. So, you know, there's a lot of these different traditions. I know that you personally have written and studied many of them. There's the Mayan tradition and
mm-hmm.
the Indians, many Native Americans have different traditions. And there's so many of them that all talk about this period we're in right now.
Mm-hmm.
From different points of view, different languages. But this is what's so fascinating, is this correlations with other traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I study, Western astrology, overlaps with all of those.
Mm. You know, until I read your book, I didn't really understand the extent to which, I mean, I knew it intuitively, but I didn't get the depth of the impact.
Uh-huh.
And you have a way of communicating that in your shows and in the book of the magic when you bring these things to light.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a language. Astrology is a language. It's an extremely sophisticated language.
Mm.
But really, when it comes down to it, you know, and I trained in linguistics, I wanted, I guess, all my life to find a language that was refined enough and precise enough to talk about these subtle, immense symbols.
Mm.
And, you know, you've probably looked at the cross of Van Dyck,
mm-hmm.
right, in France, in the Pyrenees.
Yes, I'm not an expert on it, but
mm-hmm.
you're going to have to fill us in on
well,
that.
Well, I don't, you know, this isn't my specialty, but it's one of those examples I was talking about a minute ago of these different traditions that are come from different parts of the world and which, you know, were written in different eras,
mm-hmm.
but which all seem to be pointing to this time frame, this 2012. And so you have these different iconographies. They are using, in other words, different languages
mm-hmm.
to say different versions of basically the same thing,
mm-hmm.
which is that we're coming to an end of an era so that we can begin completely anew. If we decide to do so, I mean, this is our mission if we choose to accept it.
Right. Well, now, there's a lot that's been going on even just recently. For example, you have on the obvious external world going on, the global world, you have the financial collapse, you have the election of a new president. We're moving from the fifth night, the Mayan fifth night, into the sixth day, which happened to be about the same time as the election.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that, according to my notes, Pluto moves into Capricorn into 2008.
Yeah.
And 2 years later, Uranus moves into Aries. And
that's right.
I'll leave you to explain.
Well, this is the big deal that you can find referred to by astrologers as the Grand Cross.
Okay.
Or the Cardinal T-square.
All right.
And this is, all astrologers are writing about it. It's
a wow.
huge, big deal. And this, the years that you just mentioned, 2010 to 2012, are the years when the planet Uranus, which is very slow and dramatic, so that when it makes its changes, they're a big deal.
Wow.
It makes a 90-degree angle to the planet Pluto, which is even slower. And so its changes are even more of a big deal.
Wow.
So the fact that the two of them are forming this 90-degree angle in the sky,
mm-hmm.
and that they do so, this is all geometry, you know. This
yes.
is just what's happening above us. That they peak in that angle in 2010 to 2012, which
wow.
are exactly these years that are keeping repeated by all these different seers, you know, the religious, the spiritual, and even the scientists who talk about the peak oil years.
Oh, yes.
As being 2012. These years keep being, you know, they keep coming to us from different places. This is what fascinates me.
Yeah.
You know, one of the dicta of the Cross of Hendaye was that between 1992 and 2012, we'd see the Earth's most dramatic changes. And look what we've seen. In the past 10 years, we've got the birth of the Internet, economic globalization,
mm-hmm.
these mass extinctions and global warming, and this new form of terrorism rearing its head, stateless terrorism,
yes,
and imperialism going
terrorism.
Nuts. I mean, this is the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, I stand in awe that there apparently were these ancient civilizations that had had a bead on all this.
Mm-hmm.
You've looked at the Mayans, I think.
Yes.
And, you know, I know that all of us who were around in 1987 remember the harmonic convergence back when the New Age was in full flower. You
mm-hmm.
remember that?
And if you go back a little further, the 60s weren't too bad either.
The 60s really figure in to what's going on now. Let me, I don't want to get too technical here, but what is going on now between Uranus and Pluto echoes what was going on in the mid-60s. Now, from 1962 to 69, Uranus was overlapping in the sky with Pluto. And now Uranus is opposite that pattern.
Huh.
And a subset of this is that Saturn is in the mix, too.
Ooh.
The planet Saturn up there right now is opposite the planet Uranus for two
huh.
years. It's amazing. I mean, it's complicated, but really it's just geometry. And so when we look at these patterns, we look at the relationship between these, you know, this dance that Uranus and Pluto were doing back in these madcap 60s, which was, you know, mind-blowing all over the world.
Consciousness raising
was just going nuts. And you compare it to what's going on right now. In this 2009 to 2014.
Okay.
Are the years of the Grand Cross.
So
and you see there's a relationship there.
So we're not in the Grand Cross yet.
Well, it hasn't peaked.
Okay.
In the sense of that couple of years where they're exact to the degree.
Okay.
Uranus, right. Pluto, square to the degree. But there's an orb to it. We're definitely on the on-ramp.
Oh.
And, you know, we have now, starting really with the eclipses of late summer, 2008, we have another thing called the Saturn-Uranus opposition. And this is what astrologers chalk the financial crisis up to.
Hmm.
I mean, there are a lot of levels of meaning to this, and one of them that's most interesting is that Saturn is in Virgo, where Uranus and Pluto were when all these little babies were born that we would call, just for convenience, let's call them Gen X, Generation X.
Okay.
They were born in the 60s, where this revolution of consciousness was happening, and now, where are they now? They're in their peak formative years.
Yeah.
They're ready to take the reins.
Yeah.
And the fact that that incredible conjunction that they were born under is in the sign of Virgo. Virgo is the sign that governs cleaning up and straightening out messes. So, if, you know, I don't think it takes an astrologer to connect the dots on this. It's as if we could have a return of everything we loved about the 60s, only this time with the ecological consciousness thrown in.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Because at its highest, that's what Virgo is, cleaning up on that level. You see?
That would be wonderful. Well, and then does it also seem that the cosmic stage is being set up for an immense shift in global consciousness as well? Because the 80s and the 90s were all me, corrupt.
They were very difficult for us old hippies. Very difficult. And, you know, one of the dimensions of this, these Grand Cross things that's happening are going to come this spring, kind of bouncing around. But as humans under these skies, as, you know, sentient beings living in this world, we don't analyze it the way astrologers do. We don't go, okay, this, you know, this transit is happening and then it'll stop and suddenly this other transit will begin. We experience it all as a gestalt.
So
the fact that one is segueing into the other, and in fact some of these immense rare transits are overlapping. That's what makes this period such a big deal for astrologers. It's that there are all these transits that one hardly ever sees overlapping and stacking up like a stack of pancakes.
Really?
So one of them I want to mention is what's happening this spring. The planet Neptune is having this conjunction in Aquarius this spring. It's going to conjoin Jupiter, which expands whatever it touches, and Chiron, which is this planetoid. It's relatively recently discovered, 1977, which is the consensus of meaning about Chiron is that it governs the wound. It's called the wounded healer. Now, all of these are going to conjunct the U.S. moon, which means that they're going to line up in the same part of the zodiac where the moon was when the USA was born.
Oh, my goodness.
In 1776, which is the chart that I look at in my book, Soul Sick Nation.
Wow.
We look at that chart, the July 4th, 1776. Okay, so astrologers who want to understand what this collective consciousness is about, of the USA, we look at that chart the way we sort of would look at the chart of a human being. And so if you look at the moon of that chart in late Capricorn, you see that all these planets in the sky right now are moving on to that degree. And what we see, I mean, we can infer from this, obviously it's going to have something to do with the American wound. This idea of a hurt, which happens when unconsciousness gets suppressed, just like in a physical level. This is what happens when we try to suppress something, right?
Covered
up with all these scabs.
Yeah.
Denial.
Yes.
So what we expect to see is that this mass wound is going to expose itself, and it's going to be very big because Jupiter is going to be involved. Jupiter governs teaching.
Okay.
So I'm looking at this mass teaching on this collective level, and certainly we can already see this happening. You know, a moon in a chart represents the self-image. The way we feel about ourselves.
Oh, the reflection.
Self-reflection. Huh. It's very subjective.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's not the objective reality of an entity. It's the subjective reality.
Right.
And so it's a very sensitive part of the chart.
Huh.
And this is the part of the national psyche that's going to be under the spotlight. The moon of the USA. It's going to go through this sea change, which is kind of a cosmic pun, because Neptune really does govern the ocean.
Ah.
And then you put in the Chiron part. America's going to wake up to its woundedness. So I see this as, you know, Neptune is a complex symbol. It represents illusion.
Okay.
But we know from the great sages that to see through illusion, we have to suffer disillusionment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? Isn't this what the wise have always told us? And so disillusionment, if you look at it linguistically, dis, the prefix D-I-S,
mm-hmm.
means to take away. So the word disillusion really means to take away illusion.
Mm.
And this is what's happening. People don't like disillusionment. They go, oh, that's terrible. We're going to have mass disillusionment. But don't we have to have mass disillusionment in order to wake up to the illusion that we've been under?
Yes.
Now, I could go on and on about this.
Oh, yes, please.
Anything. Well, you're going to have to just rein me in. But this is what I find so fascinating. If we embrace the idea of mass disillusionment, it means we're going to have to cop to the ways that we've been under illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And astrologically, we would look at the fact that since Neptune went into Aquarius in the late 90s, that decade that people like you and I feel relatively uncomfortable with.
Yes.
And the 80s, throw that into.
Yes, please.
You know, we have prescription drugs sort of taking over from the good old hippie drugs. We had, you know, another interesting one is caffeine. Caffeine didn't used to be what it was. And astrologically, we can look at Neptune in Aquarius. Neptune governs drugs.
Oh.
And Aquarius governs groups, the group sensibility. So all kinds of drugs from, you know, these massive onslaught of pharmaceuticals, which have flooded the market and become normative.
Mm-hmm.
They're not sort of the outlaw drugs. You know, they've actually become the norm.
Right.
And then caffeine, you know, the Starbucks on every corner business.
Right.
This is a Neptune and Aquarius phenomenon, meaning that the timing of it can be chalked up to this transit. This is a dozen years we're talking about, and it came on slowly. But the drug that I think that is most definitive and the most dangerous is television.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
And because it's so ubiquitous,
yep.
People don't think of it as a drug. But Neptune governs all kinds of hypnosis. And if we look at the fact that this came on slowly.
Yes.
Over the years when Neptune was in Aquarius, every year that came, we saw the ubiquity more. We see now televisions in banks.
Yes. Yep.
This really blew my mind. I don't have a television. So I was just, you know, into a is nothing sacred when I saw my first television in a bank.
Well, and at the grocery store, they have them all over the place with things running off. And then when you get in line, there's one in each line.
Oh, Lord help us.
It's frightening.
Well, this is Neptune in Aquarius gone nuts.
Oh, crazy.
And what we're going to do in the spring, if we look at the transit, the way I'm interpreting it, is that the people are going to have to face the fact of the degree to which we've been hypnotized.
Yes.
And that it has gotten normalized. And we either deny some more or we accept the challenge. You know, this is not written in the stars, which it's going to be. The conjunction merely says, you know, the astrology of it, I'm just going to say something that may be obvious to many people but may not be for many others. The astrology doesn't insist that any one thing happen.
Right.
It doesn't force us to learn these cosmic lessons. It just gives us the choice. So this conjunction with Neptune, Chiron, Jupiter, and Aquarius is going to be staring us in the face that our fantasies about the American dream, you know, dreams are governed by Neptune.
Oh, yes.
Literal dreams, figurative dreams.
Patriotism would be one of those, wouldn't it, with the American flag and all
I
that.
I would agree with you. I think that that's been another narcotic.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but all dreams and fantasies, whether we consider them inspiring or whether they're ill-used, like jingoism.
Right.
And self-loss, all of these dreams and fantasies are governed by Neptune, and we're going to have a cataloging of all of them this spring.
Mm.
For example, the country was asleep when these enormous financial scandals were going on. They're not new.
Mm-mm.
It's just that there was this sleepwalking that was going on, which cannot happen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we were kids, during the post-war boom years, nobody questioned the idea that what was good for General Motors was good for the USA.
Exactly.
Right? It was,
exactly.
It was a very inherently weird idea, Lance. If you think about it.
Yeah.
Extremely weird.
Yes.
But it was masked, as you say, by this positive, upbeat framing, which said that that's what patriotism looked like.
Right.
So, you know, what's good for business is supposed to be good for you, the little guy. And financial success took over the collective imagination.
Well, I think we were sold a bill of goods.
Yes.
And they're still selling, and they've turned up the heat on the volume of that particular frequency.
I like to look at it as all the labyrinthal little ins and outs of this incredible phrase, the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's just a code phrase for capitalism, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Which is now imploding because it followed its own trajectory without any restraints into these insane extremes.
Oh, yeah.
But it really, the American dream, if you really ask people what it means to them, you'll keep getting these images of real estate.
Yes.
Houses. And it's, you know, framed in this starry-eyed, dreamy way, as if it were some numinous quest.
Yeah.
But in fact, if you really get down to it, people want to buy a house.
Yeah.
They want to have a lot of money.
It's not about a trip to Peru or the Egyptian ruins or some spiritual quest.
It's not what the phrase American dream really means.
Yeah.
So it's really quite extraordinary.
Yes.
If you deconstruct it linguistically, that the connotations it has are so glamorous and mystical.
Yes.
But when it comes right down to it, and the astrology of the timing of the astrology corroborates this, it's just Milton Friedman. It's the free market school of capitalism.
Right.
Which is now revealing itself to be this monstrous disaster for everybody except this teeny tiny minority of extremely rich people on the earth.
Extremely rich.
So what's happening to this country is that it's waking up from the American dream, which has turned into a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, we have to look at the illusion we've been under.
Mm-hmm.
And not with all the fancy language and the big American flags flapping against a blue sky and the stirring music, but looking at really what people were thinking they wanted when they kept evoking this American dream.
Mm-hmm.
And what they wanted, and this is what's exploding in our faces right now, is to follow, you know, somebody like Milton Friedman's idea that getting rid of government interference was, you know, the answer,
mm-hmm.
would lead us to personal happiness.
Yes.
Which really, we're finding out now, meant getting rid of the minimum wage laws and the public housing and Social Security. He wanted to get rid of Social Security.
Oh, good Lord.
And all these financial regulations, which
wow.
now even people like, what's his name? The big poobah of Wall Street. I'm blanking on his name.
Oh, now
we'll
I am
think
too.
Of it in a minute. But all of this deregulation that he claimed was the answer, you know, Friedman even wanted to get rid of licensing doctors. Can you believe this?
Wow.
And we all went along with it. I mean, this is the dream. Basically, everything that could protect the public, they were advocating getting rid of.
And a lot of that has happened over the years.
It has.
Every institution that's been set up to protect the public has been eroded until it's now doing just the opposite. It's advocating things like GM food and
exactly.
irradiation, and we have chemtrails in the sky that nobody's talking about.
Nobody's talking about the airplane pollution and these
yes.
huge private agencies that used to serve the public
are now owned
are
by
now
the
accountable to nobody but their shareholders.
Yes, the corporations.
So it was under Bush's administration that this, you know, this corporate power became fully merged,
yeah.
unapologetically merged
oh,
with
yeah.
government. But this is in the chart of the USA, the potential for this. So it wasn't, you know, we have to get outside of the party politics
mm-hmm.
to really understand the truth of this. There was a trajectory here
that allowed for all of that to unfold.
There is a symbolism in the chart of USA
okay.
that indicates that it could go in this way if people went to sleep.
And that, yes.
The breakdown of what you were talking about, I call it the commons.
Huh.
And there's this wonderful grassroots movement now to reclaim the commons. You know, the idea of a functioning, healthy state that takes care of the people.
Yes.
You know, before this idea of big business becoming, you know, taking on that big daddy role.
Right.
So there are now that everything's falling apart, there are cracks in the schema.
Yeah.
And through these cracks, the light is coming in. So we have these little grassroots movements popping up. And there was, you know, one of the transits that hit us. People who read the Skywatch on my website will be bored to hear this again. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but there is an aspect in the sky called the Saturn-Uranus opposition. And one of its facets in late summer, and then it began in earnest at the fall equinox, was the sudden burst of public outrage at these bailouts.
Oh.
Do you remember there was a brief moment there?
Yes.
Where the populace woke up and got really angry and thought, you know, expressed suspicion for
yes.
a change of what they were trying to do when the House, remember, first voted down the bailout.
I was really surprised that there was such an outcry. And yet, didn't it feel to you that it was just like a toot in the night?
It went back under, didn't it?
Yes.
But, you know, this is the thing about Uranus. I want to throw some mythic imagery here. Uranus has to do with sudden slaps in the face.
Uh-huh.
It is discontinuous and eccentric in its timing. And the roller coaster ride that the Dow Jones is on now is a perfect expression of this. I talk about this a lot in my column called The Sky Watch on MotherSky.com, so I won't go into detail here.
Okay.
But the fact that there is this discontinuous huge surge followed immediately by this huge drop, like a roller coaster, an actual roller coaster, is part of Uranus's teaching device, which is to teach us by surprise. Not in a smooth, consistent, you know, way where the cognitive processes can grasp it. But, you know, this is what we saw, for example, in this sudden burst of public outrage when it suddenly, you know, thousands of people were signing these internet petitions.
Yes.
And getting furious about reports that, you know, the CEOs, the very ones who created the fiasco, were getting away with these multi-million-dollar bonuses.
Oh, yes, out of the bailout money.
Out of the bailout money. And do you know the head of Goldman Sachs is still making $20 million a year to this day?
Yes. Oh,
so,
I know.
But these were things, this is the point, I think, that were happening for years and years in this gradual trajectory. But nobody woke up to it until this Uranus-Saturn energy came in and started popping the balloon.
Yeah. And now, it's surprising. I see all of this as basically a grand robbery. It's kind of a cleaning out the piggy bank of what's left of America.
Well, you know, Naomi Klein in The Shock Doctrine, I'm sure you've read this, she talks about that it requires there to be these disasters, whether they're meteorological and genuine, like the tsunami, or concocted or enabled.
Like 9-1-1?
11th, yes.
Yeah.
In order for the public to accept this nonsense, which is completely counterintuitive.
Yes.
Like you say, you know, spending $230 billion a month on a failed war. Well, who in their right mind would think that was logical? Unless, this is her argument, brilliant book. Unless there were these concocted shocks wherein the, you know, the human, the populace, USA is the most blatant example, turns into stunned children.
Yes, yeah.
Regresses.
Yeah.
And looks to these, you know, big daddy figures.
Yep.
Without the kind of individual ability to make distinctions anymore.
And don't you see part of the problem as also being the fact that the major media is completely controlled and does not disseminate the truth?
Totally.
Kill your television. You know, I had a friend tell me tonight that his neighbor watches the news 24 hours a day. I said, well, she's wasting her time. Not only that, but she's going to make herself sick.
Yes,
because there's nothing true about the news. You can barely get it on the internet.
Can we put a plug here for KPFA other wonderful independent
media? You can put in a plug
media.
Anywhere you want.
They are, you know, they're the heroes.
Which one is this?
KPFA.
KPFA.
Pacifica Radio. I think that there's a lot of hope here, Lance, because these transits are forcing such a discontinuity from the status quo.
Yes.
That's their meaning. That's not sort of just a symptom of them. That's their purpose. So that the symbolism of these current events that are happening with lightning speed, you know, Uranus governs literally lightning. So this business of time seeming to go faster is actually indicated by, you know, in a metaphysical way. But the symbolism of these events that even the crass mass media is throwing up on the screen, on the TV screen, if people were connected to their gut, they could read all this symbolically.
Yes.
As this giant cartoon.
Yes.
With, for example, the automakers are the dinosaurs, right on cue, file the dinosaurs.
Yeah, very good.
Everybody knows that. See, it's getting more and more obvious.
Yeah.
It's getting harder and harder to deny.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ralph Nader, poor, abused man that he is. History's going to show him to be way ahead of his time and the true hero of all this for all the flack that he's been getting.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the big three automaker bailout is kind of the target for as much public antipathy as it is, because it's being conducted in the light of day. as opposed to these sweetheart deals with the Wall Street folks that took place on weekends.
Yes.
And behind closed doors.
Yes, in fancy resorts or wherever they go.
And, you know, we were all too shocked back then to see the writing on the wall.
Yeah, well, not
so now the dinosaurs come in, and they're so obvious and blatant that suddenly, you know, Congress is asking them, did you come in on a private jet? Remember, you know, those hearings?
Yes, I love that.
It was great, but I want to say that it's really, they're peanuts compared with the bankers.
Oh.
But it's just that, you know, it's as if the sky wanted to really drive the point home.
Yes, yes.
So,
yeah.
You know, you have to ask whether, in order to wake up the people, what kind of symbolism do you need?
Yes.
And these bailouts have brought the public closer to connecting the dots.
Yes,
the monster
yes.
that
You're
big
right.
business has
You're right.
become. And now we're seeing that the automakers are just the most obvious example of that, because people are getting the point that the question is, should we be manufacturing these gas guzzlers when we're, you know, 10 years away from a post-petroleum world?
Exactly. And making boxier cars that have more wind drag when 20, 30 years ago, supposedly they had cars that went 70, 80, 90, 100 miles to the gallon.
That's right. There's been a real...
And the electric car.
...over in time here. The 80s and the 90s kind of made a kind of a back loop. And you can see all this in the cycles, the monetary cycles.
Now,
so I'm excited. I say let's really dream. Let's turn the American dream into a real dream instead of a fake dream.
Into a vision.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And doesn't that, don't you think it's important for us to get back to our ability to tap into the matrix of the earth again? And the energies that, you know, I don't know how I'm trying to say this. In other words, to connect again to the source.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Neptune at its highest is the source, is the understanding that we're all connected.
Yes, yes.
At its worst, it's the dream in the sense of the staggering around like zombies without consciousness.
Which is where we are now.
Which is this hypnotic state that
yeah.
we're saying that the USA has been in. At its highest, it's that word you used a minute ago, vision.
Mm.
Neptune governs them both. So... this is the point. The consciousness that we bring to these transits is what's going to make the difference.
Okay.
Of whether we all wake up into this magnificent rebirth as a country, or whether we break down and stay broken down. Now, in the world that you were just alluding to, the world of nature, I call it natural law, there is no such thing as breakdown without renewal.
Mm-hmm.
The planet Pluto governs breakdown going into renewal. But it doesn't mean, I mean, there's nothing written that if American society breaks down, it has to become reborn in the same form.
I don't think it can.
Well, this is just it. And when we say, oh, the world is ending, we sometimes get so myopic that what we really mean is American society as we know it is ending, and we should be very careful not to make that mistake.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that the world is ending. It means that the form of the society as we've known it is ending.
And that's a big relief. You know, that also ties into the Mayan calendar, which coincidentally ends, it's the end of time anyway as we know it. In 2012.
That's right.
Now, is it true that there's the Grand Cross
the
that
Grand
occurred
Cross.
In 2012?
Well, that's the year we were talking about a minute ago. And, you know, Jose Arguelles brought this to the public's attention that
mm-hmm.
the ancient people had used that year, 2012. How could they know? You know?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
This began exploding people's consciousnesses back in 87, just to imagine macro cycles that big.
Yes.
They were talking about a cycle that began around 3100 BC.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's geological evidence, you know, that there were huge climate changes around that time.
Mm.
the first great flood story that we know about dates from around then.
Yes.
And so, you know, we do have a lot of their imagery repeating. And the Grand Cross in Western astrology is just one more way of saying the same thing. But the Incas, they had such a prophecy too. And they, some translations of their prophecy were, the world will turn upside down in 2012.
Well, you know, many people are talking about the idea of a pole shift.
Say that again.
A lot of people are talking about the idea that along with all of these shifts in energies, there will be a pole shift.
Oh, yes, of course.
Or a magnetic
mm-hmm.
shift.
Yeah.
Or both.
There are astronomical correlations here. But, you know, even the Kali Yuga, which is from the Hindu scriptures, also dealt with astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
The shift in the pole star, which Western scientists can track, which is what you're referring to, were talked about from astronomical points of view. But back then, you know, the ancient Mayas and the ancient Hindu scholars did not differentiate between astronomy and astrology.
Mm.
It was the same thing to them.
Mm. Mm.
They didn't have this idea that, well, there's science, which is real,
right,
and then there's
right.
spirituality, which is, you know, not real.
Right.
They didn't have that.
It was all one.
It was all one
yeah.
to them. And these ancient astrologers in India, I mean, some of the, this is the Kali Yuga stuff, which translates to the dark time. Which is the age we're in now.
We're in now, yeah.
And some scholars say that it started in 3102 BC, which is basically the date of the beginning of the Mayan calendar.
Yes.
So it's just extraordinary.
Yes.
These correlations.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And some of the prophecies that the Kali Yuga astrologers recorded were that leaders would become a danger to the world.
Oh.
That there would be unseasonable weather conditions. There it is again. And that human beings would become estranged as far as possible from the gods.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they were writing all these centuries ago.
Wow.
So here we are. I mean, we have to look at where we are from a bigger perspective
mm-hmm.
than this dumbed down partisan political grid.
Mm.
It's important to watch current events.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at it against the backdrop of these macro cycles, you see it all as a symbol.
Yes, yes, yeah.
And then we know what the lessons are. We can see how, you can see madness for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
For example, that we basically have a war economy here instead of one that serves human beings. And I want to say, bring this back, if I can, to the USA chart, which is where we get astrologers who are looking at these things, get their hard data. Pluto in the USA chart is in the second house of money. There's a house, you know, in everybody's chart called the second.
Mm-hmm.
Which relates to finances and resources. The planet of death and rebirth is in America's second house of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it indicates, you see, that there has to be a breakdown and a renewal, a complete breakdown,
mm-hmm.
not a cosmetic fix.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we're seeing now. Now, the Pluto returns, it's called the peak of this part of the USA karma isn't until 2022.
Ah.
But these transits that we have been discussing are the prerequisites to it.
Oh, my.
Am I getting too out there, too way out there?
I don't think so.
To be understandable?
I'm with you.
Mm-hmm. So this is a kind of planet, Pluto. It's very fascinating because it governs taboo. It governs the things that are, you know, big secrets that nobody wants to discuss. And it's really fascinating psychologically. If you look at your own chart, wherever Pluto falls in your own birth chart,
uh-huh.
indicates the things which are taboo to you.
Oh.
America's chart, we get the fact that there's this huge neurosis and obsession around money.
Oh, yeah.
Pluto's in the house of money.
Yeah.
And that everything, the facts of money, how money are treated, how money is treated in the collective mindset, it's so very neurotic that people can't even see that, you know, for example, but almost half of the U.S. budget priorities go to the Pentagon. This is not something that common sense would even be able to digest.
It's insane.
But because of this Plutonian, this strange taboo thing, this is like the elephant in the middle of the room.
Yeah.
That amidst all this talk of the economy that we've been hearing for the last couple of months, with all these political speeches, this one fact is not even factored in.
It wasn't even whispered.
Isn't it amazing?
Yep.
I mean, we've got cold wars and hot wars.
Well, not to mention that they lost, that the Pentagon lost something like $3 or $4 trillion on the day of 9/11.
Yeah.
And that just did that poofed, and nobody ever went back to discuss it
again. To account it. Nobody wants to look at this.
No.
It's really something that economists know. I mean, they study history. They see that. They see these facts. They see these numbers. But I'm interested more in the denial, the fascinating collective psychology of the USA that can, you know, sort of not, it compartmentalizes. It can't really make sense of the fact. It's dickering around. It's bickering about $1 million here and there. We're going to auction off our national parks for $2-3 million, which is peanuts compared to what the Pentagon is given with nobody blinking.
Yep.
So I really do think that we have to understand the situation from the point of view of an acute pathology rather than merely politically. That's not a big enough picture to see it in.
Well, you have the opaqueness and the lies, and there's no ability to see beyond a certain point. In other words, we don't know what goes behind the walls of the Pentagon. Nobody is told anything. You know, there are black budgets that are funded by some of these CIA operations that go over and pick up the drugs for, you know, that money all just disappears down some rabbit hole where
this is so exciting, because this will not be able to be maintained anymore. People can smell death in the air. It's the death of a certain system. And, you know, it was good old General Eisenhower that coined that phrase, the military-industrial complex. These days we have to add prison industry to that.
Yes.
It's really become the military-industrial prison industry complex. And if we are going to shift with the Pluto return, with this massive transit to the USA, if it's going to survive, we would have to convert this wartime economy to a peacetime economy.
And you can't do that
without looking at the fact that we are in a wartime economy right now.
And we have been since the last World War.
We have been.
They just kept scaling it up and up.
They just invented cold wars and hot wars, regional wars.
Those are just all created there, you know, out of thin air, just to keep the whole war machine going as far
and
as
now,
I'm concerned.
We've got this, the most created one, the most concocted one of all, which is this so-called war on terrorism.
Oh.
Which is really a propaganda conceit.
Yes.
Which is framed as foreign policy.
Absolutely. And who's the terrorist? We are.
Well, the USA is the biggest one, and, you know, but even in their political terms, even in their own vocabulary, in other words, even if you look at the language and the logic of the Pentagon, the ones who are able to speak out have admitted that they can't fight a stateless foe with conventional methods.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you can't fight and win, but you can fight if all you really want to do is to create billions of profits for Lockheed and Halliburton.
And all your buddies.
This really makes one wonder.
Yep.
You know, what this so-called war on terrorism really is for. I don't think that Barack Obama is stupid enough to not see this, for example. So I think that we have to start looking very carefully at this wonderful, exquisite new leader that we've elected in, and looking where he is standing on this so-called war on terrorism. And if he's going to keep beating that dreadful drum, we need to hold him accountable too.
Absolutely. Well, one thing that kind of concerns me about that is there are two things. Both Joe Biden and who's the other one? I can't remember.
Sarah.
Which one?
Sarah Palin.
And no, not her. I don't even think about her. She's not in my reality.
Who are you thinking of? But Eric Holder, the Attorney General.
That was a comedy of errors. But warned us of a coming event. And he and one of the military guys in I can't remember who it is. Well, anyway, both warned that there's an event coming that will test the American people to the extent that we'll have to rally around Obama. Both of them said that there's some kind of event coming. Now, they must know what they're talking about.
Well, here's where, you know, I think that it's useful to step back even from partisan politics, even from the intellectual and scholarly, you know, liberal, if you will, view of the political scene, to step back from it and look at these things symbolically. If this election hadn't, what can I say, if Obama hadn't been there, it's almost as if the cosmos would have had to invent him. I mean, metaphysics really does see these things as products of mass consciousness. Everything that's happening is a symbol that is arising because, and I know this demands a leap of faith, but of course, this is what astrology is based on. It wouldn't work at all if this weren't so.
Mm-hmm.
That the collective consciousness has created these figures. They're walking archetypes.
They stand
for things. And the sky, if you will, is trying to teach humankind something.
Mm-hmm.
So it chooses these dramas, in many cases, melodramas.
Mm-hmm.
In many cases, tragic melodramas. To get its point across.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So absolutely we right. have such a thing as, you know, 9-1-1, and there are absolutely valid reasons for, you know, talking about the politics of it for a long time. Nobody has done it enough for my taste. But there are equally compelling reasons, and if we're going to keep our spiritual sanity, more compelling reasons to back up from even that level of looking at it and seeing that no matter what had happened, you see, Saturn was going to have opposed to Pluto right when September 11th happened. There was a transit in the sky, in other words, that astrologers knew about for years and years ahead of time, that we knew something was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It spanned the horizon line of the USA chart. It was just, the USA was in the total crosshairs of this massive breakdown of a transit. So
now,
if it hadn't been 9-1-1, it would have been something else.
Is that transit coming up again in the near future?
No, this is, you know, part of the series. It gets very complex, but these things don't happen in a vacuum. There have been a series of transits, and one of them, the current rift that we're looking at, started in 2000, when, at the millennium, 2001, those 2 years, the planet Saturn was opposed to the planet Pluto in the sky.
Okay.
Right after that, we had Saturn opposed to Neptune. And that was in the 2 years where Al Gore's documentary came out, and suddenly global warming got validated.
Mm-hmm.
The public woke up to the fact, wow, this is real.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a hoax. The third piece is the Saturn-Uranus opposition, which is happening right now.
Oh.
In fact, it peaked on Election Day.
Isn't that convenient?
Can you believe that?
Wow. Jeepers creepers.
So it has five peaks. You know, these things are all very complicated, but to talk about it in short view, you can kind of pick the brain of the cosmos and see that it's all scripted up there.
Yeah.
And instead of, you know, looking at merely politics, you know, which is kind of the tip of the iceberg, the current events that happened,
right.
We look back and we see, well, we can see the meaning of whatever happened.
Mm-hmm.
We could see the meaning of the breakdown of the U.S. credibility before the Bush administration. We knew that it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know what form it was going to take. Is this making sense?
Absolute sense. Absolute.
So I think we need to stay grounded in all of us, especially spiritual seekers, in these inflammatory times. They are absolutely critical. We're not just imagining it, you know.
And
we need to go
book.
Back to something that is very much more real than the kind of reality structures we depended upon before. I'm sorry, what were you saying a minute ago?
Well, as you said in your book, that we chose to be here at this time.
Yeah.
And I think that probably, if we'll look back on this time, and it will probably be a time of great miracles and hopefully an immense shift in global consciousness.
Oh yes,
because
there is
on the other side of all this breakdown, there is the golden age.
There's renewal of some
kind. And yes, we have that yet to come. So.
Yes.
Do you have any last parting words for the listeners before we have to sign off?
Well, I think your words are the key ones. That to stay sane, we need to realize that the only reason this breakdown is coming is upon us, is so that we can be clean and new and made whole by renewal.
Mm-hmm.
And to focus on that instead of getting freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
And to avoid the fear-mongerers like the plague.
Yes, yes.
Because that's really what they are. They're the new plague.
Yes, yes. Absolutely right. Well, Jessica, I just wish we had more time to talk.
Well, it's been wonderful. Maybe we can talk again.
I would love that. And would you let the listeners know where they can find you? And
please look me up on the web at www.mothersky.com. And that's the best way to reach me. You can email me from there.
Wonderful.
I live in San Francisco, but I do a lot of telephone readings all around the world. So people can come to my office in San Francisco for a reading if they're interested in that level of astrology.
Oh,
or they can read my Sky Watch for this other level that we're talking about.
I would love to do that myself.
Thank you so much, Lance.
All right. Thank you, Jessica. And make sure, I want all the listeners to make sure that they read Jessica's book, because it is just, it's a mind blower. And it's Soul Sick Nation, An Astrologer's View of America with Jessica Murray.
They can find it on my website, too.
And I hope you write another one.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Jessica.
It's been a pleasure.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.